Welcome in to the 48 Minutes podcast on Bleav, presented by Bet Online. I'm Ross Geiger, the former NBA video coordinator, having spent time with the Milwaukee Bucks, Phoenix Suns, and the New York Knicks. And I'm joined alongside my colleague, two-time Emmy Award winner, Michael Worldby Freer, who is a senior writer at Stat Factor, specializing in writing advanced statistical NBA reports for various announcers across the league. This is episode number 92, the Deshaun Stevenson episode, as the one-time flamethrower wore number 92 as a member of the Dallas Mavericks, New Jersey Nets, and Atlanta Hawks. All these years later, I'm still wondering if Deshaun Stevenson can still feel his face. I don't know if you remember that, Worldby, but he used to have it. I can't feel my face references after he buried some three-pointers.
I remember Deshaun Stevenson, the player. I don't remember Deshaun Stevenson, the gesture.
All right. Well, his face was numb, so I hope he maybe got some feeling back, post-career there. But
one can only hope.
Yeah, exactly. So before we get started into tonight's discussions, just a quick reminder, BetOnline continues to be your number one source for all your basketball wagering needs, including pro and college hoops throughout the year. With up-to-the-minute odds, stats, and trends, you can follow your favorite team's path to the playoffs with in-game live betting, contests, and all the best player props. Experience the world's best wagering platform anytime from your desktop or your mobile devices. Head to BetOnline today to become part of the team, and remember to use our promo code BLEAV, that is B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here, and tonight we'll be... We're going to start with one of the questions that you came up with, what I thought was a great one to start with here tonight, and that is a big one. Which starting five do you trust more, the Denver Nuggets or the Boston Celtics?
It's an interesting question because they're two of the best teams in the league, and they're both of their successes are really based on their starting lineup, and they've had two of the best ones, arguably the two best starting lineups in the league. And there's, you could really make a case for both of them. No team has had their starting unit together longer, played more time on the court than the Denver Nuggets, over 700 minutes at this point. They're like 1 minute or 2 minutes more than their entire season last year. And they were third in the league in minutes played for a five-player lineup. This year, they're number one. So, they have that continuity. They have the experience together from last season, winning the NBA title. Everybody's back from this season. They're an outstanding unit. We talk about Jokic all the time, and that as a unit is really one of the best in the league. They shoot over 50%, almost 53% from the field, over 40% as a group from three-point range. So there's a lot to be said for them.
Yeah, so before you answer your own question here on which team you're going with, I do want to clarify something. Are we considering their head coaches or no? Is it just purely the five players and we're going to act like they, run the sets themselves and there's no coaching decisions factored into this?
I'm just looking at the five-player lineup. I'm looking at which five-player lineup do I trust more? Obviously, we can throw coaches in the mix and if you want to make that determination. I'm just looking at which group with the five players on the court you trust more, the regular starting lineup. Is it the Denver Nuggets who are the defending champs and have the most continuity and most togetherness or time spent on the court together over the last few years? Or is it the Boston Celtics lineup, which is just full of stars and is dominating the league right now?
Okay. And health is not in this as well?
No, I want to see these
Everyone's
five
healthy.
Players. No,
everyone's just, healthy.
Well, that's part of trusting them. Do you trust? And to me, one of the factors is Denver has been relatively healthy as a group, whereas Boston's bugaboo in recent years has been their health, and they have a starting lineup. You can make the case right now. I'm not even talking about the question I posed and you raised here in the show wasn't the best starting unit, really. Which one do you trust? And if the Celtics and Nuggets got together in a 7-game series, which starting five would you trust more to get you through the series? And it's up in the air. It's a fair debate. As great as Boston is as a lineup, and I can rattle off all these numbers or whatever, it's hard to go against the Nuggets with that group that they've been together and they really we know what they can do. I guess there's that, you know, that history that really is a telling thing.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there. I would definitely go with the Denver Nuggets just because they're proven. They've proven it before winning last year's championship. They're a group that's been through the fire, all five of them. Obviously, they returned all their starting group there. And some of them, even like Caldwell Pope, have championship experience elsewhere, winning a title with the Los Angeles Lakers in the bubble. So I think they've just, you know, I got to give them the upper hand despite the records right now in the regular season, just because they've got the Joker, who obviously there's not much you can do to really rush the guy. You really can't get under his skin. He plays with composure. He makes sure those around him are composed. And I know Bruce isn't here to defend himself here tonight as our Celtic fan, but every time that the Boston Celtics to date have made it to the biggest stage, they haven't won it yet. So I'm going to go with the team that's won it.
Now, there is something to be said. If you know, as you brought up before, if you go player to player, you could probably take the Celtics to make a strong case. In terms of name value, they have the stars. They have Jaylen Brown. They have Jason Tatum, Porzingis, Drew Holiday, and Derek White. We thought Derek White, a lot of people thought, should have been an all-star this year. That's a list of all-stars across the board. So there's a strong case to be made for them. And this season, they're not just winning. That starting unit, they're dominating. They're beating teams, or not beating teams. They are 14.3 points per game per 100 possessions better as a unit on the court than their opponent. That's absolute domination by a team to be that much, have that much of a net efficiency over the opponent. So you could absolutely make a case for Boston, and it'd be hard to argue against. I just like the group on Denver having the experience factor going through everything last year. They played a lot together last season. As I mentioned, they had the third most minutes of any five player lineup last season. This season, they're number one.
Yeah. And with the Boston Celtics, I think something I would like to see early on in the playoffs, obviously not too big of a heart attack for Celtics fans, but I would like to see them have to go through some adversity, maybe go down 2-1 in a series early and see how they respond to that. Because the earlier on they have some adversity and work through that as a group, the stronger I actually see them winning the title this season. I think if they go 4-0, 4-0, 4-0, or, you know, just completely dominate series up until the finals and then have to face a team like the experience with the Denver Nuggets, if there's adversity there and they haven't really faced it yet in the playoffs, that might be tough to overcome. So it might be a blessing in disguise for Boston to be tested early, just so that they can work through that, you know, sooner rather than later. You don't want to wait till the biggest stage to finally, you know, find yourself in a small hole and look at each other, how we're going to figure this out. Like, we've never had to do it yet in the postseason.
Well, a couple of things. One, if they keep playing the way they're playing, they're not going to have a whole lot of adversity the rest of the season. Who's going to challenge?
That's my point, though. That's going to be right. That's one of my concerns.
I'm just joking. It's like they don't look like a team that's going to face any adversity anytime soon. But we all know they will. The other thing about that is they do have the experience of playing in the finals a couple of years ago, albeit in a losing effort. But a lot of those guys were on that team that played in there. Drew Holiday has that experience as well, though not with the Celtics. So they kind of do, but it's just not hasn't been lately, like you said.
Yep, no question about that. Now, second question for you here tonight. Which team has looked better since the All-Star break? The 6-0 Denver Nuggets or the 5-0 Milwaukee Bucks?
You know what? It's really, really tough. For me to go as much as well as the Bucks have played going against the Nuggets in this one. They've absolutely, since the All-Star break, they're winning games by almost 15 points per 100 possessions. That's doing it at both ends. And, you know, the way they've done it is, for them, Nuggets has really been through defense, you know, only allowing 106 points per 100 possessions, holding the opponents under 50% for effective field goal percentage, which is really impressive. It's impressive when you do it in just general field goal percentage. You do it with the EFG is really impressive. And they've beaten some really good teams during this run. I mean, they've taken care of the Warriors. They've beaten the Kings. They've beaten Miami. They've beaten the Lakers. These are, you know, these are really good teams they've beaten along the way. And the game Saturday was, you know, over the Lakers was really impressive to me.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Milwaukee Bucks here. But when I looked at this question a little deeper earlier today and considering kind of where both teams stood going into the All-Star break, this is almost like a weight loss challenge, if you ask me. Like, who's more impressive with the weight they've lost? Is it the person that lost 50 pounds but might be obese, or is it the person who's fit that shaved 10 more pounds off? You know, like, and with the Bucks, it's hard to go against the Bucks, but they're the team that were, you know, had more weight to lose here for this challenge. And I don't want to take anything away from that, because they do look a whole heck of a lot better than they did, obviously, before the break. I think they're definitely trying to find their groove. But the Denver Nuggets, I mean, being 6-0 is also impressive. But if I had to pick one, I'm going to go with the Milwaukee Bucks. I just think the fact that seems like everybody's on the same page. Doc Rivers seems to be comfortable now in the position, leading this group, understanding the personnel that he has in the lineup and on his bench, and figuring out how to best utilize each and every one of them is really starting to pay dividends and is clear in the product that they've been putting out on the floor.
Absolutely. You could absolutely make a case for Milwaukee. And I can right now. They've beaten teams since the All-Star break by 20 points per 100 possessions. That's unbelievable domination. Only the Celtics are better in terms of dominating the opponent. And Doc Rivers was brought in for defense. Well, he's got the number one defense since the All-Star break, holding the opponents to 101.5 points per 100 possessions. That's the way the Bucks played under Coach Bud for years. You know, that's absolute domination. Four out of five wins have come on the road. That's huge. And they, you know, the first couple of wins were really impressive, were eye openers. They beat Minnesota and they beat Philadelphia, which obviously without Embiid isn't as much, but we've seen Philadelphia come up with some nice wins of late without Embiid. Just looking over the weekend, they take down Dallas. So those are good. The win over Minnesota was really impressive.
Huge.
To me. But now we're going to see what the Bucks are all about here coming up, because now they play beginning Monday, 8 straight games versus teams that have a winning record. You know, currently have a winning record. That's a big test for them to see where they go from here, because for as good as they've been since the break, 2 of the wins came against the Hornets, and the other one came against I can't remember who the other team is now off the top of my head. Rockets, maybe?
Or the Chicago.
Chicago. Bulls. Chicago, yeah. So those are the other wins during this run. Now, you know, Hornets have played better. Chicago's up and down. But that's still, you're supposed to win those games. And to Milwaukee's credit, they basically dominated all three games. So there's a strong case to be made for the Bucks. I just, the Nuggets schedule, the way they've done it in a Western Conference that is really tougher, let's say, than the East. It just is this year to this point. I think makes that just a tad more impressive. But absolutely, you say the Bucks, I can't say you're off your rocker, at least on this debate, on this topic.
Yep. And they did get some concerning news prior to tonight's game, as they are hosting the Los Angeles Clippers in Milwaukee. Giannis tried to give it a go, dealing with an Achilles injury. Some footage actually went out on Twitter of him kind of warming up, taking shots, and one shot he just had some striking pain in that Achilles and ended up not obviously participating in tonight's game. So they're definitely going to need him for this West Coast trip, as you alluded to, is against some of the best teams in the Western Conference. But you know, one other thing I want to talk about on the Bucks before we do move on to our next topic here is the Pat Bev effect. I mean, you can laugh all you want, but are you thinking it's paying some dividends for this team? I think it's brought an element to this group that this team needed. But I'd like your outsider opinion on Patrick Beverley joining this team at the deadline.
I think what it does is he's an outsider coming in who doesn't care what's been going on there.
Yep.
Doesn't care good or bad. Doesn't care what's been going on. This is what we're going to do. This is how I'm going to impact this team. And follow along my lead in terms of, you know, being a presence on defense. And it was all, it's, you know, with Patrick Beverly there, it's all about improving the defense. It's all about, that's what he's on this team for. That's what he's, you know, you want to call him an antagonist, you want to call him this or that. He's there to improve the defense, and the numbers bear it out. This, they have a lock, they have a roster full of really good defensive players to begin with. Pat Bev is just another guy, but I think coming from the outside in, it's not somebody who was on the bench all season and came in and saw what's going on. This is the guy that just came in and said, I don't care what's been going on beforehand, good or bad. This is the way I'm doing things. You might get better. Follow my lead. That's kind of where I'm, the impression I get when it comes to his impact on this team.
Yeah, that's the same feeling I'm getting here too. And the last time the Bucks added kind of a dog around the deadline was in 2021 when they added PJ Tucker to the group to kind of bulk that defense and improve it. And we're kind of seeing the same effect with Patrick Beverly, who would certainly be on that short list of dogs along with PJ Tucker as far as defenders in the NBA are concerned. Yeah. But lots of great reports coming out of there. I saw another report that Patrick Beverly had recently spoken to Damian Lillard about taking some of his deep three-pointers in practice so that those other teammates around him don't see a change in the game. You know, you got to keep it similar to what the game action is going to be like. Mm-hmm. If you're going to take him in the game, shoot him in practice. So even if we're doing, you know, a defensive drill and you're on offense, like shoot those shots because everyone needs to be familiar with what the flow is going to look like. So I think he's bringing a lot of good perspective to this group. Obviously, he also has a prior relationship with Doc, having just played for him in Philadelphia. I don't think that hurts one bit, especially with some of the other assistant coaches, Dave Yeager and some other guys that Doc brought along with him for his assistant coaching staff. And you were absolutely right on the fact that he's a guy that's going to come in and lead. He's going to bring some direction and maybe clear up some of the, I don't want to say confusion, but some of the stuff that maybe Damian Lillard and Giannis haven't ironed out yet as leaders trying to co-lead this team. He's gonna start pointing, no, Dame, you handle this. Giannis, you handle that. And we'll all fall in line. And I think that's been great for this group and a big reason why they are undefeated after the All-Star break.
We'll see where they are in about 2 weeks. Let's have this conversation in 2 weeks. I mean, it's a big...
You're right.
It's a big stretch of games coming up for them to see where they, if they can come out of this, you know, I don't know what kind of record they need to come out of this, but they come out of this looking good. Now they're going to open eyes and now they're going to say, hey, this is the team we thought at the beginning of the year was going to be the NBA champions.
Yep. And speaking of NBA champions, if I had to ask you right now, World B, who is your NBA championship pick? Are you taking the Boston Celtics or the field?
You know, right now, I'm still taking the field. And it's not a knock on the Celtics because, you know, they're absolutely making a mockery of this season from everybody else. They're absolutely doing some crazy things. They're on pace to have the second best net efficiency for a season since the NBA started keeping track of this back in 1997-98. The only team during that span that's been better for a season in terms of how badly you beat your opponent were the 97-98 Bulls, who won. They had a net efficiency of 11.8 per 100 possessions. That's unbelievable. It doesn't go back to that 72 win team. So I don't know what goes there, but since then there hasn't been a team to dominate like the Celtics are on pace to do it right now. So they're not just beating teams, they're beating them bad. You know, they're number one in offense, number two in defense. I don't think they're going to get to number one in defense. They're a little too far behind Minnesota. But, you know, and we've seen during this run, they're absolutely dominating the first quarter. This is what's amazing about it. We saw it Sunday, but we've seen it all season. They're the number one team in the league in offensive efficiency in the first quarter. They're the number one team in defensive efficiency in the first quarter. They're the number one shooting team in the first quarter. And then the number one defense against shooters in the first quarter. They absolutely destroy teams' will after just 12 minutes. So the only reason I take the field, other than I get 29 other teams, is...
Well, not 29. You know,
when I take the field, I still get two teams that haven't lost since the All-Star break in the Nuggets and Bucks. I get the team with the number one defense, that's Minnesota, and I get Oklahoma City, who's the only team besides Boston that's in the top four in offensive and defensive efficiency. The numbers alone tell me take the field in this case, but the way Boston's dominating, you could easily put your money on them and just sit back and relax until June and, you know, just wait for them in the finals. Because at this stage, who's really beating them? But I'll take my chances with those other teams just from a odd standpoint.
Yeah, no, I'm falling along the same lines as you. I've got to take the field here just because the two in the East that really I think can still be disruptors to the Boston Celtics reaching the NBA Finals is one being the Milwaukee Bucks. I think if Giannis is fully healthy, if Damian Lillard gets hot in the playoffs, I mean, you just mentioned it, Boston dominates first quarters. The one thing Milwaukee can't do in a series against Boston is have Damian Lillard shoot two of seven in the first quarter. He cannot have a 5 of 14 first half and then pour it on in the fourth. He's got to be on his game, shooting lights out from jump street to compete with that offense. But I see the Bucks obviously being a disruptor out there. And then, of course, I've always got my eyes on the Miami Heat. There's just something about the Heat, you know, in a series. Jimmy Butler is going to be back. Obviously, he's been bounced. He kind of picks and chooses when he plays during the regular season, if you ask me. And come playoff time, he's going to be strapped and ready to go. So I don't discredit Miami with Jimmy Butler playing like playoff Jimmy. Obviously, Bam Adebayo has a lot of versatility defensively that can cause some problems. And then you got Spoelstra, who just seems to always find ways to be competitive in series. So those would be my two teams out East. And then I'm not going to go over the teams you already mentioned in the West, but I think you failed to mention your Los Angeles Clippers. And that's another team that I think matches up really well with Boston. If it came down to an NBA Finals matchup between the Clippers and the Celtics, I mean, playoff Kawhi, Paul George, if they're healthy, they certainly could, you know, take down Boston in seven games with, you know, under the leadership of Tyronn Lue and all the stars that they have. So I think it's a no-brainer to take the field, but again, you're right. If you took Boston, I mean, you're certainly probably going to be comfortable as well.
I mean, it's unbelievable what they're doing right now. I mean, yeah, absolutely impressive to put that. I mean, people don't realize, yeah, they took care of Golden State yesterday. They put a really beat down on them, and Golden State hasn't been the team they were the last. Golden State was playing really well heading into Sunday. They were playing probably their best ball of the season up to this point, and they just got ambushed. It was incredible on both ends. They couldn't score. They couldn't stop. It was absolutely impressive just what Boston is doing during this run.
Yeah, and I'll say that was definitely still a great road trip for Golden State. It was mm-hmm. the last game of that road trip. Obviously, an embarrassing loss. There's no way else to say it, but at the end of the day, like, it was a successful road trip. It was one game, but certainly I think it caught a lot of teams, especially in the Eastern Conference, by surprise, just how much the Boston Celtics dominated that one. And speaking of scoring records, we'd be doing a disservice to the game of basketball if we didn't talk about two big ones that happened over this past weekend. And we'll start in the NBA, and that is with LeBron James, who surpassed 40,000 points all time on Saturday night against the Denver Nuggets. Of course, as we've mentioned, that did come in a loss. But World B, first, like, what was just your reaction seeing him do that? I mean, obviously, we kind of saw him on pace to do this a couple seasons ago, but just to have it come to fruition here, I mean, just an incredible feat. I mean, do you think we'll ever see it again?
I mean, personally, I don't think it's not going to happen in my lifetime. I don't think the record itself it's just another milestone in a long list of milestones for LeBron. That's incredible. His season in general has just baffled me, just how incredible it is. It's like 25-7-7, something along those lines. It's just that's a number. If you're a 25-year-old, you look like, if you're a franchise and has a 25-year-old that can get 25-7-7, you're feeling really good about your future. This is a guy at 39 with 21 years under his belt that's putting up this kind of numbers. He's had just an incredible run, and he's having a terrific streak right now of, you know, assists and points. And at this stage, nothing surprises you when it's about LeBron, when it's LeBron doing, but it's just, you know, last week I'm watching the games. I'm just thinking about it. I can't believe what I'm watching somebody do. You just forget that he's 39 years old. You forget he's got 21 seasons under his belt already. He doesn't play like his numbers aren't of a guy who's winding down, even though he's supposed to be winding down. Winding down for LeBron is going from 27 to 26 points a game. It's absolutely unbelievable. As for if anybody can do it, I took a quick glance, and I'm just, you know, the number two player on the active scoring list is KD, Kevin Durant. He's got over 28,000 points. Using 2,000 points in a season as a barometer, because that's, you know, basically what you can do if you're having a really good season, if you get to the 2,000 point mark in the season. He would need six straight seasons of 2,000 points to catch LeBron, and he hasn't had a 2,000 point season since he left Golden State. So that's out.
Yeah.
Then there's Giannis, who's got over 18,000 points. He would need 11 seasons with at least 2,000 points to catch LeBron. And Giannis so far has only done that twice in his career, although it appears, barring injury, he should be able to do it this season. And then the next guy is maybe Luka Doncic, who is 29,000 points behind LeBron. This means he would need 15 seasons of 2,000 points to catch LeBron.
Yeah.
And LeBron's only had 2,000 points in a season 10 times in his career by himself. So
that tells us all we need to know.
All this is predicated on the fact that this is assuming LeBron would never play again. This is as LeBron's numbers right now.
It's a rolling
LeBron,
total.
LeBron's showing no signs that he's done dominating or being a dominating player in this league. So they would need to do all this and not have LeBron play anymore. He's still got however many seasons he wants to play and dominate. This record is going to be will not be eclipsed anytime soon.
No, it's absolutely amazing. Especially, I saw another one that was pretty interesting on ESPN. It was breaking down Victor Wembanyama and how many seasons it would take him just based on their projections and whatnot. They said 23 seasons. Now, Wembanyama could be the best player in the league in 3 years and could be from year three till year 10. But a guy 7'5", 7'6", whatever you want to call him, there's no way he's playing 23 years in the league. So, and this is before we even factor in the fact that LeBron James, if he really wanted to, probably in his mid-40s, could easily be like a Vince Carter and be a spot-up guy or post up like the Joker in Denver and just create for others because he's going to draw so much attention. Not sure where he wants to take his career, but I mean, this guy could certainly almost... Where do you think he could end up? Let's end on this. Where do you think he could end up? Like, do you think he could get to like 46K?
I think 45 would be a good barometer for him, because that would be four or five more seasons. If he played four or five more seasons, he could get to 45,000. I've said this for years now. LeBron's the only player. I don't know, wherever you want to put him on the list of all-time greats, I would never criticize anybody has him at number one. Our guy Bruce Bernstein, I believe, has him at number one. Totally, you can totally make a case for it. He's not my choice, but that's fine. It's just,
yeah.
But he is the only player I've ever seen, maybe Magic Johnson, that if you told him you have to play one of these positions, one of the five positions. Say you came to LeBron and before the season, say, LeBron, we're really weak at center. I need you to play center. He could not only play center, he could be an all-star at the center position, not fan voting, like play at an all-star level type. Yep. He's that good of a player at his size and to do that. I don't know. He could do it at power forward. He could do it at point guard. He could do it at any position you need him to play. He could do it and dominate and play at an all-star level. I really don't know there's ever been anybody else in this league. Maybe Magic Johnson, you could make a case for. I don't know of anybody else that could be that type of player. That's the kind of player LeBron is.
Yeah, no. Well said there. And shifting gears here, let's talk about the college level for a minute here, as Iowa's Caitlin Clark surpassed Pete Maravich as the all-time NCAA scoring leader. So we'll be with you being our stats guru here. I'm definitely not trying to take anything away from Clark. Obviously, she's phenomenal. She's electric. She's great for the game of basketball in general, not just women's basketball. I'm really excited to see her get drafted and start playing in the WNBA. But Maravich played without a three-point line. Do you think that should matter at all in this?
No.
Okay.
I don't think it matters at all for the simple fact that if we're going to first of all, they're two separate records. We all
understand. For sure.
I don't think there's any. It's a nice milestone. It's a milestone. It was great to see. Wasn't crazy about being broken on technical
free throw.
Yes, on technical free throws, but yeah, whatever. That's fine. It doesn't matter to me because Caitlin Clark has done this taking almost 600 fewer shots than Pete Maravich.
Ooh.
Over three. Now, Pete's numbers, anybody who wants to go in or hasn't figured it out by now, go in and take a look. They're eye-popping. You know, 44 points a game for his career, 42 points a game for his 3 years at LSU. It's mind-boggling. But Caitlin Clark shot the ball better from the field. Caitlin Clark shot the ball better from the free throw line. And if people might use the three-point line as something that benefited her, that's fine. I can make the case that between that and the shot clock, Caitlin Clark had to take a lot more shots under duress than Pete Maravich did, and shot better than Pete Maravich did in his career. You know, in his career, you know, Pete Maravich took average 38 free field goal shots a game. 38. Caitlin Clark has gotten to 34 is her career high. She's never taken more than 34 shots in a game.
Wow.
Pete Maravich averaged 38 shots a game. He once took 57 shots in a game. So then he scored 69 points, his career high in college. Now, he's the only player in Division I history to have four 60-point games, which, again, can't take that away from him. That's an unbelievable achievement. But 57 shots. Imagine what Caitlin Clark could do with 57 shots from the field.
It's probably, and she might hit 100
percentage. Could she? 69 wouldn't be much of a challenge. So,
nope.
I understand that. I understand people doing that. He played in much fewer games than Caitlin Clark did. It's all there. But you know, he also just took a billion more shots than almost 600 more shots than Caitlin Clark did. I think that factors in. I think the shot clock factors in. I think the 3-point line, you can use that as an argument against Caitlin Clark. I could use that as an argument against Pete Maravich too, or for Caitlin Clark, you know, to her benefit. So I don't think it factors into anything in terms of legitimizing the record or whatever you want to call it. I think it's a tremendous achievement by someone who has really transformed the game. I mean, she's really really made it must-watch TV for women's basketball, and it's outstanding.
Yeah, no question. And I knew you were going to bring some good perspective to that question, so you knocked that one out of the park. So I need some help clearing up some confusion on this next one here, and that is, should we be worried about Tyrese Haliburton and the Indiana Pacers? The team is 3-3 since the All-Star break, and Haliburton has been absolutely brutal lately, and I would know more than anyone because he's on my fantasy team, but here's his last four game stats. He's averaging 9.5 points per game on 26% shooting from the field, 15% from downtown, and just under 8 assists a game from the guy who leads the league in assists on the season, averaging 11.3. I'm ready to hit the panic button on the Indiana Pacers. Are you?
Well, on the Pacers, yes. On Haliburton, I don't know just yet. You know, he's allowed to have a slump, and he's coming off an All-Star weekend where he was the host.
Yep.
In his host city. So that there's possible being, you know, having to be the guy there during All-Star weekend that could have factored into some of this. I don't know if it did or not, but it's a fair thing to bring up. The Pacers, yes, I think here's the thing. We've known they've had a good offense all season, and we've known their defense has been terrible all season. And now, since the All-Star break, their defense is living up to the billing of being bad because, you know, since the All-Star break, they, you know, are overall for the season, they're bottom five in defense. You know, they're giving up almost 119 points per 100 possessions. And on the road, it's even worse. It's over 120 points per 100 possessions. It's terrible. The problem is their offense is starting to slump now, where they were, since the All-Star break, they're still top 10, they're eighth, but they were a number one team, number one or number two with the Celtics for most of the season on offense. And now they're slumping down. They're getting about four fewer points per 100 possessions. If your whole plan is to outscore your opponent and your offense is slumping, that really puts you behind the eight ball. Here's another problem with the Pacers. They're just 17-11 versus teams that currently have a losing record. And that's the worst among, that means there are 18 teams that have a winning record. That's the worst record against losing teams among the 18 that are currently have winning records. So you can't, you got to do better than 17-11 against the bad teams. And they're just not, I mean, you know, last week they lose to the Spurs, they lose to the Raptors.
Yep.
You can't do that if you want it. We didn't really see them. We saw them as a nice story early on. And they were. They had some nice wins. They, you know, better than they have been. Their offense was really generating a lot of points. But their defense was just terrible. It's been terrible all year. There's just no other way to put it. And, you know, I brought up how bad their road defense is. Three of their next four are on the road. And they got to go to Dallas. They got to go to Orlando. They got to go to Oklahoma City. And they got to host Minnesota in that stretch. That's three of the top five defenses in the league you got to face in the next four games. If you think it's bad now, how's it going to be in about 10 days?
Yeah. No, it's definitely alarming. And I've been in total shock of kind of just how this season's transpired for them. And maybe it was the in-season tournament that kind of set us all up for a higher expectations and then, you know, going ahead and getting to the finals of the tournament in Vegas. And then, of course, getting Pascal Siakam. It just seemed like they were, you know, making headway and headlines and everything was pointed in the right direction. But things are not looking good here as of late. But speaking of panic teams here, we talked about them on a more lighter note last week. And I should say brighter note with the Phoenix Suns. And they got some disappointing news. Devin Booker's right ankle sprain has him now set to miss 7 to 10 days. And taking a look at those 7 to 10 days that the team likely is going to be without Devin Booker, the Suns' upcoming schedule includes a game at Denver. They then host Toronto at home, Boston at home, and then at Cleveland. And then if you want to stretch this out to the full 10th day, that would also include Devin Booker missing a road game in Boston. So they have Boston twice in the next 10 days. So the Suns just dropped their two last games at home and now find themselves seventh in the West. And it's pretty crazy to think they're in the play-in tournament as of now with the cast of characters they have on that team and the stars that they have aligned out there. So my question for you is, do you think this team can survive without Booker, or do you see them falling even further behind, kind of solidifying a play-in spot in the Western Conference?
I think they absolutely can end up in the play-in spot. That's a tough stretch to go through, and we're running out of games in the regular season to make up for that. That's a really tough schedule thing to play the Celtics twice in 10 days. That's no matter how well they're playing this year, we knew they were going to be good. That's just the lousy schedule luck on their part. The problem is they're just, you know, since the All-Star break, they haven't gotten out of the gate. They haven't shot the ball well. They really haven't done anything well offensively. Just 18th in the NBA in offensive efficiency. since the All-Star break. They're 13th in shooting in effective field goal percentage. This is the number one shooting team in January in effective field goal percentage at 60%. Now they're down to, 55%. The biggest problem with them, and I don't care if Devin Booker's there, I don't care who they're terrible taking care of the ball.
Yep.
They are one of the worst teams in the league in turnovers. They and it's been this way all season. They are 25th in turnover ratio, turnovers per 100 possessions. They average 15 a game. And that leads to 18 points a game for the opponent off turnovers. That's another bottom five ranking. They're 27th in that department. You just can't win games like that. They were in January, they had the best shooting percentage in the league, but they weren't dominating because they kept turning the ball over. Their efficiency stunk still, or not stunk, but it wasn't as good as it should have been because they kept turning the ball over. That was just ruining all the good they were doing when they were shooting the ball. Kevin Durant has not shot the ball well since the All-Star break. People don't realize he was one of the best shooters in the league at the break, from at the rim, from mid-range is a game, and from three-point range. He was one of the top 10 in all three. And now it's just, since the break, he's like 43% from the field, and he's 9 of 34 from three-point range. He's your superstar. He's the guy who came over to the Suns to help lead to a championship, and now he's not getting it done so far since the All-Star break. In that game, the other night, was it Sunday, that loss? Yep. To the Thunder, they were just doubling him like crazy, and he couldn't shake it. He couldn't get out of it. It was creating such a mess, and they can survive it, but KD's got to step up and be a super. He's just got to be a superstar right now.
Yeah, especially in Booker's absence, and obviously those turnovers were a glaring flaw in that Sunday night game against Oklahoma City at home. Just so many careless passes that were just taken out of the air by Oklahoma City, leading to easy baskets and transition. And as far as those
31 points, Ross, 31 points Oklahoma City had off turnovers on Sunday. That's the most Phoenix has allowed in the game all season off turnovers. And that was just against a team you have to play at home. You have to beat, you don't have to beat them, but you got to be more competitive than that. You got to come through down the stretch. If you want to get out of the play, you got to win some of these games.
Yep, and those double teams are not going to be stopping with Devin Booker out, especially as other teams watch tape and see what Oklahoma City just executed defensively against KD. They're going to make the other players make them pay, and again, I'll bring it up one last time here, but their glaring need at point guard was once again on the bright stage last night. They had Sabin Lee out there, and obviously I'm not here to bash any players, but it was quite clear they weren't really interested in guarding him at all yesterday in the game. And while Lee did play some decent defense out there, just he's such an offensive liability for a team that needs to have the offense. They need four other players that can at least shoot the ball, because with it, if you have four other shooters out there or four other threats, you can't double KD as much, because as we know, Kevin Durant is a willing and good passer. He can recognize doubles. He knows how to pass out of them. But when it's almost 4-on-5 offensively out there, I mean, it's going to be a tough one for him to handle. And until they get Devin Booker healthy, I've got major concerns on the Phoenix Suns. And it's a shame, because we were just so optimistic about their start after the All-Star break on last week's show.
Well, you know what? You talk about where you're going to miss Booker, and you mentioned the point guard. He was having a great – when Beal was out, he was having a terrific run as the ball, prime decision maker with the ball. He was having career high in assists. He was passing the ball like crazy. He was a big time ball distributor and still getting his points as he obviously needed. And that's probably a reason why Kevin Durant was having a really good shooting season as well. Yep. Devin Booker was really doing. I remember when Chris Paul got hurt last season or whatever, and Booker, they put him in that role of playmaker, not necessarily point guard, but guy with the main ball distributor, and he was solid there. So I think they have – that's where they probably are going to miss him, in without having a point guard. Not having Devin Booker there is really going to hurt him.
Yeah, most definitely. So Devin Booker, get healthy. Suns fans need you back ASAP. And
absolutely.
One final announcement here before we do close down tonight's show. 48 Minutes Live will be back on playback.tv Wednesday night for an exciting matchup between the Milwaukee Bucks and Golden State Warriors. That one tips off at 10 p.m. Eastern. Hope to see you there. You're going to get a lot of the same content that you listen to here on this podcast throughout those games. We come prepared with team fun facts and stats, and it's a lot of fun. So come hang out with us, ask questions, get engaged, and we look forward to hanging out with you on Playback TV Wednesday night. Again, that's Bucks Warriors. Hope to have you along with us. But once again, thanks for tuning into the 48 Minutes podcast here on Believe, presented by Bet Online. We'll be back with you next week to be sure you're up to date in 48 on all things around the association. Take care, everybody.